Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Hristo Zizovsky. We'll talk to Hristo about wine, wine lists, wine awards, sommeliers, and a lot more. We'll taste the Sicilian white and a Piedmont red selected by Hristo for our weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Benrubi. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. All right, advanced sommelier Hristo Zizovsky was raised in Greek diners, working the grill, eventually taking him to Culinary Institute of America. Hristo gravitated to the front of the house, first working with Wayne Nisch at three-star restaurant March, spent 7 years with Jean-Georges Van Gerichten at Jean-Georges, earning a 2010 James Beard Award for Outstanding Wine Service. He joined the Altamirea Group in 2010, serving as their corporate beverage director since 2014. Hristo is a Wine and Spirits Magazine Best New Sommelier, Food and Wine Sommelier of the Year, and I know he's excited about this, he just received the 2018 Wine Spectator Grand Award for the restaurant A Fiori Wine Program. Hristo, welcome to the show.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
He's very busy because he's opening all the wine that he brought in.
I don't have to look at it.
Yeah, you don't have to look at it. All right, so let's give our audience just a little background, a little context. So give us a quick background on your journey in life and wine that got you pretty much to where you are today, which is running the beverage program at Altamirea.
Yeah, I kind of was forced into wine because it was a journey. I grew up in, like you said, in working for my dad up in Rochester, Finger Lakes area, and went to CIA and decided at the end, before I ended at CIA, I wanted to go to the front of the house and work service.
But you did go to CIA for
culinary.
Food.
Yeah. Okay. There was only two options back then, culinary, and I think there's still only two options, culinary and pastry, at least to get started. Right. And then moved to the front of the house, when I moved to New York, I was still 20, 21. I just turned 21. Wow. And when I started at March, I was just 21. And as a front waiter, had to learn wine to be a captain because there's no sommeliers there. Joe Scalise was the owner wine director, and Wayne Nisch was the other partner chef. And I decided, okay, let me see if I like it, and bit my teeth there and took some courses with the ASA and met so many wine directors because Andrew had so many different people coming in teaching, and that's where I decided I wanted to work at Jean-Georges. I heard he was like the nicest French man, and I was like, I don't want to work for French people.
Wait, so you picked it? It's like
I wanted to try it out. Okay. And I definitely jumped in the deep end and became a captain there and worked my way into sommelier. And
Give me the years. Jean-Georges, the 7 years was from when to where?
2003 to 2010.
Okay.
And I went in as a captain because I was like, wow, this is way more advanced than where I came from. And I'd take three steps back and I don't have to worry about closing the restaurant or being a manager or doing inventory or any of this. Let me just be a waiter again and enjoy and see if I really, again, go into another level and see if I'm still passionate about it. And I did, and I kept my nose above water for a while, and eventually got my head above water, and you're always kind of shoulder deep. And
breathing.
Yeah, I was able to breathe most of the time, at least a few hours on the floor every night. Then I just started getting really good at my craft and had some great mentors with, you know, from Chuck Semyon to Greg Harrington to Bernie Sun to Paul Roberts to all these guys that were either in the city or, there's a lot of them. And I got into the MS program because I really just wanted to be like, what's the elite? What's the elite? What's the elite? And for me, I think my saying in the 20s is you're hungry and you want to do everything. And that's what I was trying to do. And I still kept my head down though. I take pride in being there for 7 years and working with so many great people, but also meeting so many great people. You know, Daniel Janis and it just was great. Fun. And some friendships that have grown and are just some of my best relationships now. And then it took my time at the end thinking, well, I'm. You know, John George is such an established, fantastic, I learned so much about not just about wine and food, but just organization and being a perfectionist and just things you can't teach. You just need to be in it for a while. And like, it's just that clockwork every day, just doing it. And then I knew I was ready to the last year or two, like have to find, I was in a rush. Like, I've done it for that long. Like,
right.
So, and then the Alta Maria group came my way, and I felt like, yeah, I was looking for a group like Jean George, pre-Jean George, like 15 years before, because right. Everyone there is already there and established, and I know, like, I want to hopefully be that. So far, so good. I mean, so we're going to 8 years now.
That's 2010.
2010.
That's the Alta Maria group.
Mm-hmm.
That's Michael White,
mm-hmm.
Maria, Osteria, Marini. We'll get into all that later on.
Yeah.
So that brings us to current. I'm just curious of a couple things. Was there wine around your family growing up? And in that timeline you gave me, mm-hmm. was there a time when you realized, like, wine was the thing? You know, wine is what I'm going to focus on?
Wine was around the table because I come from an Eastern European family, and my dad made wine in the garage.
Okay. How was it?
It was fine.
Okay.
It's still fine.
All right.
It's good. It's meant to be fresh, cold, and delicious. I mean, you go to Italy
natural.
And you get it out of the barrel. Like, that's what it is. I think maybe that's probably. I always want a new sensation on my palate. I think every year somebody's palate changes. Whether it's like I use the spirits because they're so more broad. Like, you start with like vodka, and then you go to rum, and then you go to like bourbon. Then you want something more single malt,
right.
And then you get into gin, and that's right. kind of the thing. And here's some water. And and I just feel like maybe that's yeah.
So you were around wine.
I was around wine and booze. And my dad has a copper still at home too. So he'd make some really great, I wouldn't say moonshine, but grappa brandy, like out of plum skins and out of the grape skins too. And he was actually
strong stuff, right?
It's strong, but it was smooth and it's so good.
It's sort of like a good digestion thing too,
so
right?
I think
at the end of a meal?
Around the age of 12, 13, I would sip a little bit. I never overdid it. I never felt, I'm unfortunately a good kid, and I never was rebellion.
Okay.
I never was rebellious.
That's what you think.
Yeah, now, then you get in your 30s and you start wanting to do stuff.
Right.
And so I always had this tolerance and this discipline about it. So yeah, when I was in high school going to parties, drinking, and I knew my cutoff point. I just knew not to get in trouble, but I had a pretty decent tolerance. And that's probably that's where the drinking came in. The passion and all that was more like, why is this different than this? And what is, why is this so expensive? And why is this not so expensive? And learning. And it was like the first art I got into that it's like, okay, I know why these are different. Now, why are they different and what makes them different?
You started looking into it and understanding it.
Yeah, and then all that opened up because my mom cooked in the kitchen all the time. My mom's Greek, and my grandma's, cooking, and everyone's cooking. That, like, just those memory boxes, people call them the filing cabinet in your head, like the aromas of the roasted peppers in Cab Franc, or those, like, runts or banana, or those nerds from those, like, Shirazes or whatever it was. Like, for me, it's like always, oh, you smell that grape bubble gum, like Big League Chew? That's, for me, Australian Shiraz when it's, like, super high octane. Like, little things like that made it fun. And it just stuck, and I wanted to get better at it.
So that you were off to the races.
But then when you get to a certain level, like now, it's more like everyone's good at different things. So like
think there are more people. You know, when you were throwing kudos and accolades out to the guys when you started, there were a lot less then than I think now.
I also now know, as a professional, what I'm good at and what I'm not good at and what pieces I need to surround myself with.
That's the best manager.
And I want everyone around me to be better than me. Like you need to know everything. You just need to you need to take ownership of everything and let me know what's going on. So then I can help you make the best educated decision. So we're not doing a runaround and we're not losing money and we're not, you know, you don't look stupid in front of people.
The ultimate compliment is if you drop dead, guy could step right in and do it because of you.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to download a bunch of info from you. So your wine lists have pretty heavy skew towards Italian wine. So while I have you here, tell me about some exciting things happening with Italian wines, regions, grapes, winemakers. I mean, I asked you if you wanted to bring wine in and you made this like a science project. So obviously, you know, you're thinking, tell me what's exciting you now.
Easy drinking wines are exciting. I think it's exciting a lot of people.
What makes an easy drinking wine? Low alcohol? Tell me your definition.
I think when the movements, I mean, I don't want to say I'm cliche because I said this like 4 or 5 years ago, but like just chilled reds that are easy to drink now are, you know, I mean, Gamay is, and I saw Gary talk about it the other day, Gamay is huge. Palo Verga is huge.
But you said chilled reds. People don't think of reds chilled. So that in itself is...
Okay, properly served
reds. No. A little cooler than normal.
I like it at 55, 60 degrees. That's pretty cold for some people. But that's, I mean, again,
but
there's
that's
way
a,
more...
That's excuse the pun. That's a cool way to drink wine where the temperature is a little cooler.
Yeah. I just mix... I mean, so back to answer your question because I do run off, but I'm trying to focus here.
I think I ran off, but
no,
go
but,
ahead.
I think... Things with, to answer your question, I'm really excited that first of all, none of these are my wine lists. I think there's a beverage director, wine director, head bartender at every restaurant that takes ownership of everything there. They are the face of it, and I want them to, you know. So I like to see what's exciting them and what actually can work. Am I going to push the envelope and try things and see things, and are people going to take recommendations? Yeah. I think everyone's gotten way smarter and... are just want to try something new all the time. And so to answer your question on that, yeah, no one wants to hear Etna anymore because Etna was cool 4 years ago. But
it's
I visit
funny.
Etna and it's amazing. And for me, it's still the coolest place. I'm going to go,
not cool anymore.
It's not cool anymore. But, you know, there's things coming out of, you know, other parts of Italy, sorry, of Tuscany. I've always loved Liguria because I got it. That's the first region I had to really learn that I had no information on when I opened iFiori. I still love Liguria.
That's coastal Tuscany.
Northwest, south of Piedmont. I mean,
Vermentino.
Yeah. I mean, that was on my list. That was on my list to show you.
I was almost going to pick it, but I deferred to you.
I went kind of a little more geeky.
Yeah,
because right honestly, I'm being selfish. I really wanted to taste this one because I haven't had it since I was in Italy.
That's why I
wanted. And they brought it in because I requested it. So, or we requested it.
So regions like Liguria.
I just think.
But you're still a big fan of, you know, Etna and Sicily and all of that.
Yeah, I love
okay.
it.
Okay,
love it.
Keep going.
What am I drinking? Sorry, let me think about like what the last few things I've purchased or, I mean, Friuli. I think things like, I just think my motto is it's not broken. Let's see how we can make it better. So for example, like people frown on Pinot Grigio, but there's some amazing Pinot Grigio out there. Like, has it been bastardized? Yes. Was Chianti bastardized? Like, I would say like, if you want to learn Italian wine and like, oh, I'm kind of intimidated, but like, it's maybe because you had so much terrible stuff, and you look at the price point of which one's cheaper and which one's better. I just think you don't have to spend that much more for some of these regions.
Can you think of one and make a recommendation that's somewhat accessible retail of Pinot Grigio?
I mean, Elena Val Pinot Grigio from Alto Adige. If you want Christmas.
Wait, so Alto Adige, say the maker again.
Elena Walsh, like Walsh, like
spell it.
I think it's spelled the same way like the 90210 family was. Walsh. Okay.
W-A-L.
Yeah, L-C-H. Okay.
So there's a Pinot Grigio if you like it and you want to up the
game. Oh, yeah, that should retail for like $15.
Yeah, that, instead of forget that other guy.
Yeah, but and then, I mean, but then that's from Alto Adige. And then if you go to somewhere like Friuli, who's make much less juice, and it's going to cost more because there's less wine there.
Right.
I mean, like Vinica is one of my favorites.
Spell.
V-E-N-I-C-A.
Okay, Vinica Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, and there you're going to get more of a, like a richer, a little bit more dense style because it's just, that's the style. There's more moisture. It's not as alpine. So for me, like, starting with that and educating people on, like, simple things like that and just questioning is fun. But, I mean, I can get, I mean, geeky. I mean,
give me one more.
I mean, I'm drinking Pella Verga all the time. So I love Pella Verga. I like...
Tell people what Pella Verga.
Oh, that's like, it's one little grape from one little place in one little spot outside of, in Barolo.
Okay.
So like, that's getting super geeky and what's out there. But again, I just think...
P-E-L-A...
Oh, Pella Verga. P-E-L-A...
V-E-R-G-A.
Yeah, and there's only... If you see it, it only comes from two places in Italy, so you know it's going to be pretty consistent.
Is it expensive?
No.
Okay.
Like, I know Scampi is pouring it by the glass right now from one producer.
See, that's the point of this show. Guys like you to tell people stuff they never heard of. If it's accessible at restaurants or retail and the price is reasonable, that's great.
I think what you should think about is... I think people have, I think the last 10 years, the pretentiousness of sommeliers has gone away. So I think people are asking a lot more questions, which is great. I think if you see some...
Well, wait, pretentiousness is one thing. Intimidation is another. Do you mean intimidation too? Because if you're intimidating me, I'm less likely to ask
you
questions.
Sure, sure, sure. But the pretentiousness of...
Is there too.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're, I think you can be both in different levels of your visit to the table. Like, so talking to the sommelier... Right away, I can come in and look very kind and smile, and that's not intimidating. But then if I cough at your ideas or whatnot, or like if you question why I'm asking you something, it's like, oh, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, my job is to find what you don't like first and then put you in a category of picking something you'll like in a category.
Right.
I think, again, everyone's gotten smarter. So like asking the questions that we're telling the sommelier of, I'm looking for something, you know, you start from the top, go down. Do I want white or red? Do I want light bodied, full body? Do I want something riper and juicy, fruity, or do you want something drier? And kind of getting there, and then.
But the consumer has to talk.
It's my job. It's our job to also
pull it out. Right.
So that's where the unpretentiousness comes in, because the more approachable you are, the more you're going to get out, and you know that you're working for them. You're not there doing them. Let me reword it. You're not doing them a favor.
Right. That's your job.
It's our job.
Right. So that's good advice.
I'm gonna taste this. You want to taste this?
Yes, we're gonna taste the first. We're gonna taste wines for the weekly wine sip, but we're gonna taste the white first. This is a Grillo.
It's a Grillo.
Grillo
from 30 meters. This vineyard is 30 meters from the sea. It is the saltiest, stoniest white I tasted in the past year. I was like, this is crazy. I haven't had it since about 6 months ago.
Teeny bit of acidity, nice. Very saline during and on the finish, like on the lip. All right,
sorry, we'll talk about it later.
No, tell me the producer first.
Nino Baracco.
B-A-R-R-A-C-O, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And he's a experimental winemaker that turned into a winemaker. In the Marsala area of Sicily. So
where they make Marsala for chicken Marsala.
Yeah, okay. Where it's like so highly produced. And
okay.
Yeah, but so it's at the exact opposite area of where Etna is, but I don't know. I just, go ahead.
We'll talk about them more during the wine sip. All right, so you gave me some very cool Italian wines regions. Get out of Italy, go anywhere in the world, pick one other thing that's exciting you, whether it's a grape, it's a winemaker, it's a trend, it's a region.
That's why I asked core questions before I got here, because I'm not good on the spot.
You got that. But the answers are more genuine. Is there anything in France?
France, for sure. The thing is, I'm absorbed with Italian wines, and then French wine is still my first passion. And I just think anything that has a sense of place... And I just don't like highly extracted wines right now. I can't do highly extracted wines. So like things like Loire Valley and Cab Franc, which is an easy answer. Gamay, which everyone's drinking now and it's still affordable.
Is Gamay becoming a thing? I mean, it's great. It's great with food. There's great makers. Is it going to be like the next rosé, or it's that good?
I think let's see how this Beaujolais Nouveau year goes, okay, because it's all coming out. And
you mean if it goes crazy? That's
I've been seeing a lot. Okay. If I'm gonna hedge the market, I've seen a lot more Beaujolais Nouveau like offers out. So I think people are.
Do you like Beaujolais Nouveau?
Yeah, I haven't had it in a while because last time I had it, I had a big headache afterwards.
Yeah.
But no, I do. Like, I mean, again, there's better wines out there. Like rosé back in the day, like when rosé, like for me back in the day when I first started, like 7-8 years ago, I didn't care for rosés from Italy too much. I always preferred like the Provençal, even the California stuff, even the Finger Lakes stuff, like cooler climate, like with the fruit presence without the acidity, because Italian wines are so acidic.
Right.
But I just think the last 2-3 vintages of Italian rosé.
Give me a good Italian rosé.
Monte Italy, Gracchi. Gracchi was the first one I tasted. I go, wow, this is really good. Like, it's really laser, and it's from Etna. Again, it's from Etna, so sorry.
That's all right.
But there's just a lot of, yeah. Those are the first two that pop out of my head because that's what I have at home.
That's plenty. What you had said earlier is a good segue to what I want to ask you, because the way you describe wines, I want to get your thoughts on natural biodynamic and organic wines.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, it's sort of two answers. I'm curious because does or doesn't the type of restaurant and clientele you have dictate how much of that you're going to carry? Like,
yeah,
for instance,
listen, the best
Marais is going to have less than Roberta's, maybe.
Yeah, no, for sure. Give me your
take on natural organic biodynamic first.
All right, I'll give you first of all let's get Marais out of here, cuz Marais is also really fine dining.
Yeah,
and
no knock to Marais.
No, but Marais has some too, like, yeah. iFury has. We all have it. It's just
right.
It's not. So let's use Osteria Marini concept we have, the restaurant we have, right? It's our like casual, it's abundance, it's the stomach, it's Emilia Romagna, stomach of Italy. And we have three major Osteria Marinis. We have one here in Soho, the flagship. We have one in New Jersey, in Burnettsville. And we have one in D.C. Completely different. If anything, D.C.'s finally starting to catch, like in Soho, we can do what we want.
Right, because it's Soho.
It's Soho.
Clientele,
it's casual, people want new things. As long as you stay within a price point, or it's something super geeky like Occhiopinti or something like that, you probably can ask for something because people know the name now. You can get pretty wild there. And that's our most experimental wine list in the whole group. Then DC, you need to know how to sell it too. You know, like, there's a lot of reasons why you can do what you can do. Like, if I need to play remote sommelier too and teach from far away, I know what everyone's grade level is at. So now someone in D.C., our wine director in D.C., is actually from New York and was excited about, and he, again, teaching people ownership. I'm like, let's taste these wines. Do you like them? Yes. All right, let's put a handful of them on the list and see how they go, and let's see what the crowd reacts to. And overall, it's been positive.
Okay.
And again, it's more like, great, this percentage of the list can be that geeky. This percentage of the list, we need to have this and whatnot. And then you get to New Jersey, into Burnettsville. Now, there's areas of New Jersey that are awesome, but this is also a more conservative area.
It's a pretty staid, upscale.
They want smoother wines.
They want the obvious stuff.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Burgundies, Bordeaux, Cali Cult.
That's great. So for me, it's more what is the clientele asking for, and how do you, again, yeah, do we have to have fun, and do we want to mail it in? No. Do we want to keep it interesting and fun and see like what happens and how do people react? Sure. If people don't like it, do we have to learn how to react and fix it? Sure, of course. Like, I know, like, if you don't keep evolving or pivoting, like, you're going to die. Like, it's, and right now this is where we're interested in. Like, is there people that
this
like...
This is where the pivot requires attention.
Right, but also there's also some real marquee producers, like, you know, still those Napa cabs and whatnot that are also super important. And there's a place for everything.
Right.
There definitely is a place for everything.
Right. So That's how you handle the restaurants, which makes total sense. I mean, your clientele, location, and all that.
And let me confirm, natural wine is such a broad topic that I don't want to make it one color. There are some amazing natural wines made from people that you would like, wow, they make natural wines. They've been making wines for 50 right. years.
And Bordeaux. Then
there's, yeah, exactly. There's people that like, you can't just give it a sticker. And
that, so you brought up one of the good points. That's part of the problem, the way it's.
And then there's things that are like experiments. And then people are like, oh, this is good because I like, great, that's fine. Like, there's a place for everything. Like, everyone has a different tolerance. How about that? Let's look at it as a tolerance. And also let's be real with what's in the glass. Sometimes there's some effed up wine that I just feel like drinking tonight. And sometimes I do not want to put that in my stomach. But then also, again, it's all about what are you in the mood for? Right. Like right now, I kind of wanted to taste this wine again because I'm like, I want
I think Barocco's a natural, yeah. you know, low intervention guy.
Like there's
right?
like no sulfur. Maybe the little bit, 2 days of skin contact. And again, some of that's used not just because it's like, I think more of as a preservative than anything else, I think, for him. And
so natural wine is definitely environmental. I had a guy, Sam Anderson, on. He did the Mission Chinese wine mm-hmm. list. You know, kind of a naturalist. He just left and took Jorge's place at Contra and Wild Air.
Oh, cool.
So there's a guy that's his life. You know, with you, it's important.
I have pizzerias that need $7 Pinot right. Grigio, and right. I need $35 glasses of white Burgundy. Right. Like, I have, it's yeah, it's fine.
So that's why it is the way it is. I'm always curious about my guest take on this, and some do it and get it more than others. You're a pretty decent user of social media. You know, I've been following you for a while. you do a lot of stuff in the industry. You do a lot of stuff at the restaurants. You do some very cute family stuff and all that. So if people are interested in you, they get a pretty good snapshot. But let's focus that question into, in your mind, how has social media changed how we view and consume wine?
It's not just wine. It's the most important form of advertisement for selling yourself and also just looking what's out there. I know
discovery.
Discovery.
Right.
Like, who are you going to follow? What are they having? It's 20 times more important. Like, I think the statistic is, I think let's just use Coca-Cola or McDonald's. So, you know, the two majorly. It takes 17 times. The statistic is 17 times for you to hear something, for you to remember it. And I get it now, like Coors Light, everything, anything you watch for football, anything you watch for your news, anything like, you know, your Wheel of Fortune, like those, they're not stupid, right? So I think it's super important. I think it should be acknowledged more than abused, because it's also, you're going to put something on there and you're going to click, and you don't want it to bite you in the butt 10 years from now. Right. Like, I think
tell
right
my
now,
kids that,
but also, is there a insecurity about things? Yes. Like, it's really hard. Like, you can't, is there a jealousy factor of stuff out there? Absolutely. Is there I wish we can do it better. Listen, this is why, when I said, like, I've been in this business now 25 years, and I'm really fortunate to know some of the best social media people out there. You know, I'm not going to know names, but they deserve a lot of the stuff they have. And I know a lot of these people, they're also trying to share. And I know the saying is, if you don't, there's no picture, it's not done. I still feel like there's also things of like, let's keep pushing the boundary and let's keep moving with something else, because I think it's important. And if you know, like, I just feel like back to what I was saying, like, I know what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, or I know like what I need to surround myself with, as far as what I need also a location to surround themselves with, or I know like, okay, we don't do that well, so let's not even try that concept.
Right.
Like, let's just know what we are.
Right.
But there's some opportunities here that people just can see, like, and I think it's more important, and it's one of the most important things of advertising right now. Like, for me, I think I'm actually quite decent at Instagram and stories and stuff. I have fun with it. Like, my wife can tell you everything that's happening in the whole world because she just knows news and how to follow everything and, like, the Underground Railroad with everything.
She's a real whiz.
Like, she's like, did you hear this news yet? I go, actually, I did, because I actually maybe have a couple apps or a couple things. Like, I don't care for Twitter. I like Instagram because it's, like, instant gratification. Like, everyone's different. And I don't know.
People used to rely on cable TV, the newspapers. Yeah. Now it's automatic and social media. But it's the same thing, you know, like in wine. Like, I see you using it to promote. Like, I know you've been pushing a lot of champagne, so mm-hmm. you'll do a thing on that. I'll see you at events, so it's background. And then I'll actually see you doing some family stuff. So, you know, you get involved with it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, I'm sorry, but, like, I try to do as much as I can, but you're busy sometimes too, and you just can't do it. Like,
right.
If you don't see me for a week, it's because I'm probably bogged down doing a project.
Right.
Or I haven't found anything that was inspirational or something like that. Or, and then sometimes you just want to, like, I know friends that are just like, I'm going to be off for a whole month. Great. Awesome. Like, it's healthy. It's like, you know, everything's instant right now. And if you're not instant, not even just with social media, both emails and your phones and stuff, like, you lose an opportunity, you lose that allocation, you lose that, you know, not allocation, but you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody else is going to grab it before you. So yeah, it's,
For me, it's been great for discovery. You know, when
discovery is amazing.
When I follow a guy like you and I see the stuff that, you know, you're pouring or what excites you, you know, and then you take that and all the other people you can follow, you really get a sort of true sense.
And one thing that I've tried and I'm trying to get better at, and I think, is that, and this was, I use this philosophy not just with social media but with any projects we do. Like, I just came from working on a project. iFiori, we're trying to launch a new midday thing, right? And it's like, let's just not just put something up there and see what happens. Like, let's see what actually works. This restaurant's been open for 8 years now. We're going 7-8 years. And it's like, what are we? So the concept is going to focus on what we are and what we want to advertise ourselves at, not just what, like, the trends are currently or whatnot. So, like, we're going to go
through
our strengths.
Sounds like you're doing the right thing.
So my point is that you want to focus on – I'd rather take an extra day, week, month to make sure it comes out properly and there's no surprises afterwards. Now, that's my job.
I agree with that.
But it's hard because sometimes things have to happen. There's no timing. We're very fortunate. I've gotten so much support from my company. I'm given so much autonomy for my company. And my job is to hopefully, when I'm ready to present something, I'd rather do two things amazing than do 20 half-assed things.
I agree with that. And in the
But I have to do more like 24 things amazing instead of 100 things half-assed.
Right, right. All right, so let's talk about the restaurants. You got to, you know, I want to talk about the restaurants and the wine programs, and I want to get your take on all of that.
Yep.
But I kind of mentioned to you outside before we went on the air, but you got to answer this for me.
I'll try.
How does a guy named White from Beloit, Wisconsin, of no places, Wisconsin,
yep,
become one of the greatest Italian chefs in the U.S.? You know, and then wraps it around with guys like you and an incredible wine program. We'll talk about the Grand Award in a second.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy story, isn't it? Michael White, you know, one of the owner partners of the Alta Maria Group.
Michael's an amazing chef. I've been very fortunate to really work under three major chefs. And I've worked under all of them because I feel I am proud of the cuisine and proud of being able to complement that plate.
Right.
I didn't leave Jean-Georges for so long because there's no best. Like, everyone has different bests, but there's top lists, right? And for me, the energy I had at Jean-Georges, I'm like, this. Someone has to at least match this in a way where I can do something different. It can't be the same, because if it's the same, it's like, you know. So I just think Michael is a master at his craft. His food is delicious, and it's super accessible. It's familiar, and it's yes. not, I don't say pretentious again, but first of all, it's fancy because it's high quality and it's special, but it's not 1,000 things.
I agree. And the environment.
And we never done that. Like, Maria, like, became the first place where, wow, this is like a expensive, like a high end restaurant where I can go with my jeans.
Right. It's also the Le Bernardin of Italian seafood.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go with the strengths. I want you to toot your horn a little. The restaurants are predominantly Italian, pretty much all of them. iFiori just received the 2018 Wine Spectator Award of Excellence, which for a restaurant, for wine service, you know, is the highest award from one of the most followed publications. Let's start there. What does that award mean? It's validation. I mean, tell me what that means and what you have to do to earn it.
So the grand award from Wine Spectator, I mean, there's always haters and everything, right? So nothing's
right.
perfect.
So I'm not even bringing that up.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is what it is, and it's still very important.
I have respected the Wine Spectator. I've worked the wine experience. I've been very fortunate to be one of the few sommeliers invited every year. And without that source of media, this is one of the main reasons why wine is what it is today.
Agreed.
And they still figure a way to keep themselves relevant. Now, do other people come in? Yes. Is there some other amazing publication? Yes. Like you gotta have a competition to keep yourself strong.
They're not at the forefront of the natural organic, but have to be.
But they've also pivoted from like those big like
yes
other person wines.
They've opened
and
up.
I respect. There's. I'm very fortunate to throughout the years meet a lot of the journalists, and they are. I know who they are, and I definitely respect what they do, and to do it in such a broad, it's hard to do broad, you know, like food and wine has to be broad. Wine Spectator has to be broad. Wine and spirits have to be broad. And they all do an amazing job. They all are still around, and they're all around because they all, they're good at what they do.
Right.
And they all teach us something that still wants to be taught, wants
right.
to be read.
Right.
So that award has always been the coveted, like you need 100,000 bottles, like you need like a big budget. And for the most part, that's not completely true anymore. I think I did it with we did it, not I could not have done it. Like the team there is amazing.
It's always the royal we from here on in. I mean,
so,
of course it was you and everyone else.
The point was to keep it focused, and everyone's got ADD in this city. And putting the proper few minds together and given the support and the budget and the space. Because right now in New York, it's all about space.
Tough.
And I think Wine Spectator is empathetic to that. And they're also, they see the process. And for us to be at iFiori, Marea, Ristorante Marini, and at Vaucluse having the best of award for so many years, you know, I picked their brains. They've always been there, you know, I'm not going to mention who it is, but they've given the advice of, you know, there's no answer. It's like a math problem. You want the answer, but like, how are you going to get to it? You got to do the work. And was I very surprised when we got it this year? I thought we needed one more year.
Oh, and so that's great.
That's it was. Yeah.
So
it was,
you aspire to it. It'll come eventually, but it hit you unexpected.
Yeah.
That's a nice
thing. It's, listen, we'll see. I don't have the answers yet of what it's done yet because we just won it and the season's about to start. In New York City, it works the season starts after the Jewish holidays.
Right.
We're about to start.
Right.
Let's see what happens.
We'll check back with you
and
see.
In all honesty, I'm very lucky to have such a big group and so much support that it's not one restaurant. We didn't mortgage the house on it.
Right. Right. And you have Wine Spectator recognition awards at other places.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Christo, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to just talk about a couple of the other restaurants and wine. Then I want to subject you to our wine list. I want to get your take on a few things. And then we're going to dig deep into these two wines that you brought in that so far we're off to the races.
Yeah.
So you're listening to The Grape Nation. Our guest is Christo Zazowski. We'll be right back after this message.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach Cave Age cheeses, Der Scharfer Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Hristo Zizovsky. Hristo is the corporate beverage director at the Alta Maria Group. We were just talking about Osteria Marini, Maria. We were talking about the Grand Award at A Fiori. They have great pizza at Nicoletta, and we'll talk about a few more. So you get the big award, and like you said, you'll see what happens. Talk to me about like a place like Maria, which is arguably one of the best seafood restaurants, certainly the best, one of the best Italian seafood restaurants. That wine list has to be a little different because of the food, right? Is it?
You'd be surprised.
Which is what I was fishing for.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. First of all, yes.
You need trophies there anyway.
You need trophies there anyways. And some people want Amarone with oysters anyways.
Right. God bless them.
First of all, I mean, that beverage program is run by Francesco Grosso. He opened the restaurant back in 2009. And anything that you have there, drink there, order there, or have been recommended and enjoyed goes to his, is a feather in his hat for sure. And, but that list, yes, is, you know, it's, that is an international restaurant as well. Like I've been very lucky to be brought up at Jean Georges and I Fiori being hotel restaurants. So you need to have something for everyone because you don't know who's going to walk in the door. But that
when
restaurant.
When you say international.
Like meaning like clientele. Clientele. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the food is sort of international. Jean Georges, French.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking about who's going to come in their restaurant.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's a very diverse...
So, he can... Yeah, he's... I mean, the list there is... It's Italian, French, and American dominated. Let's say that. But also, it is a lot of seafood, a lot of crudo, a lot of pasta. So, there you can... I mean, in any... I think what I've learned is that if you're going to have a regional or a cuisine style... and you want to go affordable somewhere or go somewhere experimental or go somewhere like, you know, that's where you go. So like white, Italian whites there, that list is amazing. Like just a little background about Francesco as well. He was back in Enoteca days. He was back in Enoteca back in those days. So like he knows how to push the envelope as much as he can there. And I've learned so much from that wine list. Again, like all the wine directors in a way, it's like what's exciting, what's cool. And, but yeah, if you want to drink your Salaya and you want to drink your Oprione or you want to drink your Soldera, even though Soldera goes with everything, in my opinion, right. I can't afford it anymore. It
goes with oysters.
Right.
Yeah, it is a little bit pricey.
But yeah, no, I mean... But that's the market now, too. Like, everything's getting more expensive.
Yeah. I wouldn't let you get out of here without telling me, because you oversee Nicoletta, which, you know, is pizza and some other food, a fairly simple wine list.
Mm-hmm.
But this makes you the expert. Tell me the two or three best wines that go with pizza. And I know each pizza varies, so let's start with a margarita. You know, you can only pick one. I know there's a lot more answers, but you got to give my listeners some intel.
You know what one of the best-selling wines of that list is that's been there since the beginning?
What?
Lambrusco.
Well, bingo. I think Lambrusco, I'm glad you said that. Lambrusco is a terrific pizza wine. Yeah. Why?
Because it's... why?
It's red. It's bubbly.
It's red. It's bubbly. We use a Gasparosa there, so it's not super acidic. It's more of that dark purple. It's got fruit, a little bit of off dryness to it, but even though it's considered dry, it's ripe.
Not expensive.
It's chilled. It's chilled.
We love chilled reds.
We love chilled reds. I know. Like now, it's all making sense to me. Oh my god, I'm getting.
All right. So now I'm introducing a pizza that's got meats on it. It may have, you know, the prosciutto.
Yeah.
It may have sausage, meatball, a combination.
Yeah,
I mean, you got a little more oil, meat. Give me another wine for that.
Again, keeping it very simple.
Yeah, only.
Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
Okay.
Because it's still dark fruit, and it still can be juicy, but it also is a little bit meaty. Like, it's a little bit, has that kind of gaminess to it. And again, there's a lot of wine out there. There's a lot of good and expensive. There's a few. But then there's also some, I mean, again, I try to source those families that, this is what I've been making for generation over generation over generation. I'm not here. I'm not a conglomerate picking it up. Like, it's meant there, you know, it's soulful wine.
So Lambrusco, which is a red sparkling wine, you drink it chilled, and Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. Now, clarify something for me and my listeners.
Yeah.
People know Brunello di Montepulciano, which is Sangiovese. This, what you're saying.
All right, I'm going to correct you. And this is why there's a lot of M's. No, because ahead. You're getting all the regions mixed up. Okay, right. So there's Brunello di Montepulciano from Montepulciano.
Oh, I got that wrong. My bad.
There's Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, which is also Sangiovese from Tuscany, from a town of Montepulciano. And then, yes, there's Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, which is a grape from the region of Abruzzo. So
what is the grape?
Montepulciano. Right. So it's a grape and a region is what's confusing.
Right.
So the thing with Italian wine, which is actually a little simpler, first of all, Italy's super complicated because there's so many grapes. But if you understand the framework of a wine list or the way they're labeled, it's not as intimidating. Yes, is there hundreds of Italian grapes where you need to learn only like a dozen French grapes? Yes. Okay. So like, you know, for red grapes, I can name it off my two hands of the major red grapes in Italy. Sorry, France.
Right.
In Italy, it gets confusing. But if you look at a wine list, it's usually the grape from somewhere. Like, yes, is there the Chiantis or is there the Brunello, the Montepulciano that you need to know it's Sangiovese? Yes. But for the most part, it's like Barbera d'Alba. It's, usually it's something from somewhere. And if you see the list saying something from somewhere, you know, okay, the first part's the grape and it's from this location.
Right.
So when I break down a list and then you get to the, you know, the hardcore main, like, once you teach someone the top, like, 10 major regions in Italy, which are not one from another, and then they learn the one from another, it's actually not that bad.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, but it's something you have to
pay a little attention towards. You need
interest.
To know what grade level everyone's
that's
at.
That's my listeners want to go to the next level. All right, so there's your pizza wines. I'm going to subject Haristo to our wine list. Haristo, I'm going to ask you about 5 or 6 questions. Don't dwell on and buzz through them. It's your take.
Are they yes or no questions?
No. it's your take, you know, so it's personal and all that. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? Is it seasonal? Are you trying stuff for the restaurant? Are you obsessing over something? What's on your table?
What did I just buy? I bought some, what am I drinking now? I mean, I drink Pellaverga a lot.
Okay, you mentioned Pellaverga, which is cool. That's
Barbera d'Alba, which is like the crossover drug. Like, if anything, I do
great
like it.
Great Italian from Barolo. Give me one more.
What did I get at home recently? Let me think.
Going too slow.
Yeah, I know. I'm going way too slow. Pinot Gris from, what did I just bring? Buy some Joliade Pinot Gris from California. Like, just easy drinking.
Joliade, Joliade.
Beautifully ugly, yeah.
All right. So, do you have a favorite wine and food pairing? Is there something that you'll do more often than not, or you don't?
Let's talk subjects. So I like champagne with spicy food.
Okay.
Or anything sparkling.
Okay.
That's not, it can't be extra brutto because then it really is.
Break down spicy for me a little better, like spicy Szechuan.
Thai.
Okay.
I just go Thai.
So I'm going to move along. Your answer is champagne and Thai.
And then the other
That's
thing, a weird one is, sorry, are we running out of time here?
Yeah. No.
Espresso and Barolo.
Espresso, coffee, and Barolo.
Yeah.
Just kind of switch
drink,
back and forth.
Just drink espresso and then go drink some Barolo.
Okay.
It's like my acid on a tongue kind of thing.
All right. That's the first time ever here. All right. Your wife, Tia Keenan, right?
Yes.
Is a bit of a cheese expert.
A little bit.
She has a new book coming out called Melt, Stretch, and Sizzle. I don't even think it's out yet, right?
No, it's out October 2nd.
The Art of Cooking Cheese. She's a cheese expert. It's coming out in October. Give me the classic wine and cheese pairing. Give me that wine and give me that cheese.
I mean, for me, it's It's usually something high acid, like some Chenin Blanc or something with Comté.
Okay. Comté's can never go wrong with that.
No. I like Alpine cheese, so that's like my go-to. And plus...
Aged Comté?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I ask this question. I say the same thing every time. You're not leaving anyone out. You're not incriminating anybody. But your favorite wine restaurant and our bar, a place that has great wine service, great selection, a good knowledge tour, place to hang out. Could be just a wine bar. Could be just a restaurant. Give me one or two.
You know, when I didn't have a kid, I could answer these so much quicker. Wine bar, like if I was going to go have a good glass of wine, I mean, I used to go, Terroir, and I have to go visit them down in Tribeca because I'm overdue, but that was always my place to go. And
give me one more.
I'm so boring.
Isn't it weird because you have a kid now?
I'm so
boring.
All
right, we'll go with Terroir. Do you have a favorite all-time wine? Is there one? Is there a couple?
Are you talking about like prestigious or like...
No. Anything that's favorite to you for whatever reason. Not the most expensive or the only time I tasted Domini, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Not like my 61 Le Chapelle or something like that.
Well, no. If that's it, that's it.
No, because I... for me, I enjoy drinking usually a chilled, crisp white, ideally like Chablis of some sort. And something that's not too malolactic. So, like, it's got to be firm. I like firm, refreshing whites.
Can you think of a maker that comes to mind?
So, like, you know, Fevlé or...
So, those are your favorite ones?
Like, I mean, I love Dobisat, but that's also, like, geeky and allocated. But I would go, like, clean, refreshing, like Louis Michel is still great, you know, like, things like that. I probably have those in the fridge to drink. And then also Vermentino from Liguria. And Pigato, yeah. Those whites are just great.
All right, I'm going to post those. Two more questions. You should be able to nail this.
I hope so.
Best wine around $15, $15 a little more. Give me a red, give me a white. You can give me a maker, category, grape, like Muscadet, whatever you think. I always say this, it's boring already. My kids are in their mid-20s. They're starting to make a few bucks. They're going to dinner party.
Yeah,
they don't want to bring a crappy wine. But give me the killer choice for $15, $20. Give me a red, give me a white.
Well, coming up soon, I would go to, you know, those wine shops that have, again, like a wine list, anything crazy, and look for like what's cool in that area for suggestions. But like I would
so rely on your winemaker at a good place to pluck something cool.
Oh my god, so sorry. I would say any Beaujolais Nouveau right now that's going to come out, so that
good answer. That's our red Gamay.
That's our red. And then white, I probably
go back to Vermentino?
No, because they're expensive.
Right.
They don't make a lot of wine there. So I'm thinking of somewhere that makes good and has plentiful whites. I probably would do, Finger Lakes and Dry Riesling. Like there's
good
like,
one.
There's not a lot.
Good one. They're coming into a great stride now.
They're coming into good stride. And they're local enough that I think you're going to still... I mean, if anyone has it, you know that it's not there because it's a gimmick.
Right. I think that's a good recommendation. Last question. Nebbiolo or Sangiovese?
Oh, man. It's like I have two kids and you cut one of my fingers off.
Well, you don't have two kids.
I know. I only have one.
Yeah, so... That's a bad example. You have to pick one.
I would...
I'm surprised. I honestly would have thought Nebbiolo. Yeah, I don't know why, just from gleaning.
I say...
Are you that close on both?
With food, Nebbiolo, and time to open the bottle up, Nebbiolo.
Okay.
If you're running out of time and you kind of want to pop something, Sangiovese.
Okay, good answer. I take that as a slight lean to Nebbiolo, but props to both. All right, we're going to wrap up the show. We're going to try to do this in about 5 minutes. Every week we taste a different wine on air. For our weekly wine sip this week, Christo was kind enough to bring in not one, but two wines at his suggestion. We've been drinking the 2017 Barocco Nino Terra Siciliane Blanco Grillo Vignamari. That's our white. How'd I do?
You did great. Listen, I'm going to use your podcast of how people should pronounce my name.
Okay.
And then we're going to taste, we'll do this first and then we'll go back to the white.
Yeah.
We're going to taste a 2016 Brulato Barbera d'Alba. Brulato is a very highly regarded maker. Barbera is something you mentioned a couple times during the show. It's a wine from Piedmont. So let's pick up the Barbera d'Alba. Yeah. Grape. What grape?
Grape is Barbera.
Barbera. It's from Piedmont.
It's from Alba in Piedmont, which is the whole encompassing area where Barolo Barbaresco is. So okay. It's got to be in that area.
All right. So color?
Oh, I mean, it's young and fresh, so it's this kind of dark pink ruby color, and pretty, it holds through.
Yeah. Mine's pretty deep ruby.
Yeah. It's fresh and it's pink. Dark pink, yeah.
Give me nose descriptors.
I mean, it's... cherry, wild cherry, a little bit of
red
fruits.
Okay.
So red fruits, but more like fresh, kind of the first pick of the season, not sitting on the shelf.
So freshness is a word that keeps coming up. All right. So now...
But also...
Cristo, let's throw it over the tongue, and I want you to give me some palate descriptors.
Okay. So the reason why this wine is kind of the crossover drug of Italian wine, if you're going to drink something first for red, is because it has the plump...
Wow.
Intensity, but it's not tannic.
No.
So the wine doesn't hurt your mouth. It's got refreshing acidity. So there's one thing that, Greg Harrington taught me this back, to figure out how much acid a wine has. If you want to keep picking a glass up and drinking it, it's not that you're an alcoholic. It's that the wine has high acidity and it's pleasurable to drink. And this wine has high acid without tannin. So it's like kind of drinking like a Sauvignon Blanc or whatnot, or a Muscadet, right. Where the wine is fresh and crisp and you want to keep drinking it.
Give me my first mouth feel. It's got a pretty nice medium plus body, right?
Yeah, I would say medium body, about medium length. It makes you want to keep drinking more. It won't overwhelm. It doesn't really need food, and that's why it's another crossover wine, because a lot of we're the Coca-Cola Kool-Aid society here in America. So like it has that ripeness and that pleasure, but then it makes you like want to drink more.
Do the nose descriptors carry to the palate? The red fruits, what else do you get?
Red fruits, a little bit of like dried mushroom, a little bit of
earthiness.
A little earthiness, yeah. A little bit of tobacco. Kind of crunchy though too, like you have the, you're a kid playing like running through like,
there is
the bushes.
A crunchiness to
yeah
it.
There's a little bit of that kind of
fresh crunchy nice
but at green kind of like running through like right. pine like not pine but like I don't know, I'm thinking as a kid running around playing the grass and stuff like that too.
Now you said a minute ago it doesn't have to pair with food, but if you did pair it with food, what's a good classic pair?
Well, just like Pinot Noir, I would treat this wine like Pinot Noir.
Okay.
That's why it's so kind of familiar, like from fish to like pork,
roast chicken.
Okay. Yeah, it's very food friendly, but it also hold up to if you had a lean piece of beef and stuff like that. Yeah,
it would hold up to that.
Yeah,
it's a terrific wine. What's try to work it up? What's approximate retail?
If you can find it,
right? Brulato's very hard.
$30.
Kill a bottle of wine for $30, yeah. Right? That's the problem.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to our white. Another wine from Piedmont. I mean, from Sicily.
Yeah.
The Barocco Nino Toro. So it's the Grillo grape.
Grillo grape, which is usually an aromatic varietal. Sorry, here, get some more. But this wine does see skin contact for 2 days. Sorry, skin contact for 2 days.
So there's a tinge of orange to it? A
tinge of orange, but also takes those primary fresh floral aromas and makes them a little bit more savory. Now, there's a lot of flower in this grape, though, this wine. But it's underlayered, all of this really like, it's like, you know how you come home, you know when you're in the car when you get back from the beach and you can't get that stickiness off your body? That's what's in this glass.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so give me the color, like we said, is,
so
you
So it's
know,
slightly cloudy.
Slightly cloudy,
and it's got
orangey.
This, it's got this like, yeah, it's got this like onion yellow thing going on, orange, more than orange. And on the nose, it's...
The nose is crazy. I'm so bad at I identify things, but I can't describe.
Like we
them.
Talked about when we were on the break, it's
saline.
Like it's like if you were to put the whole oyster in your mouth and you can eat the shell too.
You have that shell.
It's this. So this,
calcium
like I said
all.
Earlier, this vineyard is 30 meters, a football field away from the water. So it has a lot of that marine character. Now I love that from like LaGuardia because again, it's all coastal and sea breeze. I love that from Campania because it has that wind coming in. But I don't know. This is just like, again, it's, again, it makes sense. It's from the west side
right.
of the island, west side of the boot. You know, it's coming from that side.
It's got a good mouthfeel. Give me palate descriptors. I think it's tough. The palate to me is tougher than the nose.
Yeah. So something that happens with like some skin contact wines is that it has tannin and it has some texture. But for me, I kind of, if I give anybody like, what does it relate to? Because it's all about what can you relate it to. It has sometimes like this hoppy kind of beer thing going on.
Yes.
But it has the flavors of wine.
Yes.
So that's the best way.
That is a good way.
But it's not,
it's a very different wine.
Yeah.
What about food pairings with this?
I mean, we said oysters, so oysters. For sure oysters. I mean, any shellfish. It'll bring, like, anything, like, think of sweet, like, you know, any shellfish. Oh, yeah, like, crudos or like oysters, scallops or lobster, like...
Ceviche?
Yeah.
It's fine.
For sure. The vinegar. Like, vinegar and vinegar works because it'll, this is a little natural. So it does have that kind of zesty, but it's really fresh lemon pulp. Like, anything that has lemon or needs lemon, I would drink this with. That's perfect. The best way to explain it.
What retail ballparkish?
About 30 as well. This is okay. This wholesales a little bit more than the red, but is not really well known, so I don't think it would be marked up that much. 25, 30?
I don't know about you, but I love both wines. Not like, but love.
Thank you.
I mean, they're both very interesting. I want to thank you for bringing those in. I will post the wines on my social media, so you don't have to worry if you didn't hear anything. Risto, we're going to wrap up the show. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. Follow us on Instagram at sbenruby. That's my page. And follow the hashtag The Grape Nation. On Twitter, follow us at @benruby. Also subscribe to The Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. As I said, we'll post Risto's wine list and weekly wine sip selections and answers on our social media sites. Risto, if we want to follow you on social, where should we go?
Risto Z.
Spell, please.
HRISTOZ.
Okay.
That's it on Instagram.
The Z is for Zazowski.
Yeah, everyone still calls. Some people call me Risto's, but that's okay.
And the restaurants fall under the Alta Marea Group, Altamarea. You could Google them, and you know there's a lot of information on every restaurant, including the wine lists and all of that.
Yeah, all the wine lists. We use Binwise, so all the wine lists on every single site are up to date, and at least what they are currently printed as.
Perfect.
So
I know that you change almost every week. Not everyone does that.
I mean, some every day.
And a last note for some friends, the Sonoma County Wine Auction is this weekend, September 20th through the 23rd. It's the largest fundraising event in Sonoma County. Mingle with renowned winemakers, bid on rare wine lots, or a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Funds raised benefit local organizations supporting literacy, education, environment, health, human services, and arts, and culture. Go to SonomaWineCountryAuction.com for more info. I want to thank our guest, Risto Zazowski. Risto is the corporate beverage director at Alta Marea. You understand what he does now. I want to thank our engineer, Jeet. Second time up at bat for this show. And everyone at the Heritage Radio Network, I'm Sam Benruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.